Hey, whether you enjoy listening to Breaking Down Collapse or Building Up Resilience, I think you'll also really enjoy our bonus content on Patreon.
Yeah, Kellen and I take 20 minutes each week to talk about the news that's happening all around us and Collapse as it plays out. We like to have a little fun with it, but also make sure that you're aware of what's going on in the world of Collapse.
We look forward to having you join us there. The link to join us on Patreon is in the episode description.
All right, I have two sources I'm going to read from today. One is an article in DW, and the other is a scholarly research paper. We'll start with the research paper. It's titled, Beyond Peak Water Security, Household-Scale Experiential Metrics Can Offer New Perspectives on Contemporary Water Challenges in the United States. Now, if that doesn't sound riveting, as is often with research papers, right? But the crux of what is actually being talked about here is incredibly important to the Collapse conversation. When it comes to water, there is no doubt, there's no denying that it is one of the most important aspects of life and one that is also the most troubling, right? There are countless ways in which the cascading effects of collapse can affect human and other life on Earth, but none much more epic and quick and devastating than a lack of water. One thing that you'll notice as we talk through this article, through this research paper and the article afterwards, is that water is so clearly not a standalone issue, right? Water causes other problems cause issues with water. That's one of the scariest sort of tipping points in collapse. We talk about complexity and how our complex systems create the networks of infrastructure that all sort of rely on each other. And that is true no more than anywhere else, as with water. So this article specifically is several different researchers, you know, 10 to 12 researchers here that are looking into water availability in the United States, and a little bit more specifically, how we are qualifying or how we are measuring the availability to water in the United States. And there's some interesting tidbits here I'm going to pick out. So the first is this. They say, echoing Gleick's concept of peak water, we argue that the U.S. has moved beyond peak water security. That is, we are living in a time when the world's wealthiest country is increasingly unable to provide near-universal, safe, adequate, affordable, sustainable water services for households and communities. As a result, more and more households must manage with unsafe, inadequate, expensive, or unreliable water and thus experience some form of household water insecurity. We have several episodes on the podcast about peak resources, right? We've got peak phosphorus, peak sand, of course, peak oil. Well, this article is saying that in the U.S., we have reached peak water security. They feel that there is nowhere to go from here but downwards in regard to the amount of security that people have with water. They go on to define water security, saying it's defined by nearly a decade of scholarship, is understood as a household's ability to obtain sufficient, safe, and affordable water for its members to live a good life. Water insecurity occurs when this ability is undermined by often multiple co-present and cumulative everyday factors, including problems with affordability, adequacy, reliability, and trustworthiness. They later say, our perspective offers two key arguments as to why new measures designed to capture water insecurity in higher income countries and contexts are needed and urgently. First, we position the U.S. as a case study of how many residents in high income countries and contexts increasingly experience the material realities of water insecurity. Many water systems face aging infrastructure and a graying workforce, myriad climate change pressures on water supply and quality, insufficient financial and administrative resources to expand or upgrade centralized systems, and institutional inertia, the tendency of the water sector to resist needed change, that leave water systems ill-equipped to adapt to rapidly shifting environments. Does that not ring a bell? To me, that just sounds so much like catabolic collapse. I'm actually going to read that little list here again in a second because, I mean, it's literally the convergence of multiple issues happening at once, right? And it's the way that we neglect one area of our system in favor of others. So again, it says many water systems face aging infrastructure and a graying workforce, myriad climate change pressures on water supply and quality, insufficient financial administrative resources to expand or upgrade centralized systems, and institutional inertia, that tendency for the water sector to resist change. We've got these old aging systems, right? Approaching, 60 to 100 years old in some cases. There is a massive amount of money needed to make upgrades to that infrastructure. Well, we are currently watching as the government takes those resources, especially the financial resources, and is putting them somewhere else, right? We're completely now beginning to ignore the data. We're beginning to stop recording the data because the data says bad things and that doesn't reflect well on the government. And so they're either going to not record it at all or they're going to lie about what the data is. They're going to take the money that should have been going there and they're going to put it somewhere else. In this case, seemingly the military. This is often, and the article makes sort of this argument, this is most often happening in poorer areas or in areas where minorities live. So then the research paper goes on to describe some other ways in which we should be recording water availability, mainly not just from the supply side, so from the utility companies and what they're reporting, but more on the demand side and people's actual lived experiences with their access to water. Moving over to the article on the DW side, there is a little section here about the U.S., and the rest of the article is about the global situation, and we will speak on that as well. Finishing up, though, on the U.S. stuff, it says, U.S. water access declining as temperatures rise. A growing number of households lack sufficient access to water and sanitation. As a result, they spend an average of $15,800 more per year than other households on health care, missed work, and lost educational opportunities, according to a 2022 study by California nonprofit DigiDeep. The CEO of that foundation said, as water becomes more scarce, the number of people without access is anticipated to increase due to pressures from climate-related events. The easiest way to protect the U.S. economy from these shocks is to universalize water access. This harkens back to what I had said about how, water isn't just a standalone issue. It's not just, okay, if you don't drink water for 3 days, you dehydrate and you die. Here he's talking about how in the U.S., people are spending $15,800 more per year than other households on healthcare, missed work, and lost educational opportunities. That is quite the expensive annualized loss due to just not having access to water. Now, obviously, in the U.S., I'm bringing this up because that's where I am and that was the research paper I read. But this is an issue all over the world. And in so many places in the world, this issue is multiples worse, right? Orders of magnitude worse than in the U.S. As a matter of fact, 25% of the globe lack regular access to fresh drinking water. They are water insecure, or I should say water scarce. There's water scarcity. While half the world, one quarter of the world lacks regular access to fresh drinking water, right? So that's water insecurity. Well, half the world's population suffers water scarcity for a part of the year at least. And then it goes on to talk about how water stress is costly. Again, not just in the lost opportunity in education and things that I just mentioned in the U.S. It lowers crop yields, it worsens food insecurity, reduces energy production, and increases those health risks due to poor sanitation. It talks about how 60% of global GDP is in the value of functioning freshwater ecosystems. Basically, they said, what's the total value of all of our freshwater ecosystems? About $60 trillion, which is about 60% of global domestic product. And that's global gross domestic product. There's a map here. It kind of shows which areas of the world are going to be facing the highest water stresses versus the least. And there are some countries in the future, right, at least according to this map, that will be relatively fine. Canada, Russia, Brazil, there are parts throughout Africa that look like there's relatively low water stress expected over the next 25 years. Meanwhile, there are other countries that are going to be experiencing mild to severe issues. Many parts of the Middle East and China, India especially, Australia. Even the U.S. is listed here as experiencing medium to high stress. India is an especially troubling situation. I'm going to read a couple of paragraphs here from the article. It says, displacement and mass migration are consequences leading to instability in regions like Southern Europe as people cross the Mediterranean Sea from areas experiencing increasing desertification. The problem is amplified since implementing solutions also costs a lot of money. Diverse freshwater ecosystems can reduce the duration and severity of droughts, but have been drained through development and over-irrigation. The water crisis is also set to slow the rise of powerful developing economies, in India this case. Grafton says India does not have enough water to maintain, for example, the coal power plants producing thermal electricity that has underpinned rapid economic growth and helped alleviate across the nation. Their goal is 7% growth, but this is a fantasy, he said, of the nation with 18% of the world's population and only 4% of its freshwater. There's not enough water to go around. Kind of talked about how the problem has never been that there's not enough freshwater on the planet to, you know, to suffice. The problem is the location of that water and the location of the people. India has 18% of the world's population with only 4% of its freshwater. India is massive, right? China is massive. Together, they make up nearly 40% of the world's population, between a third and 40%. So obviously the water is not, 40% of our water is not going to be in those areas. And that's getting worse as climate change intensifies and as those countries use up the groundwater that was available, as we pollute rivers, as climate change affects weather patterns, so on and so forth. Says India's rural poor suffer most from water scarcity. Overexploitation of groundwater is a major concern as the water table recedes. Solutions include programs that fortify local water catchments with earthen dams that better retain monsoon rains before the dry season. Now, there have been some studies coming out. I need to research these a little bit more that give a little bit of an optimistic hope or take as far as the changes that have been made up to this point to provide water to many more people than had access to it in the past in certain parts of the country, right? There have been a lot of gains made in places like Africa in strengthening infrastructure, giving more access to people for water when they may not have had access previously. However, that said, in sub-Saharan Africa, it says here in the article, the task of collecting water alone accounts for 40 billion hours annually. How long do you spend collecting water? For me, it's the 30 seconds that I stand at the sink while the faucet's open, filling up my water bottle or, you know, my cup or whatever, right? 40 billion hours annually in sub-Saharan Africa alone, people are spending taking their buckets, you know, to the river, walking back and forth. This is one of the biggest reasons. We talked about this in the past, how it disproportionately affects women. They are unable to get educations. They are unable to get jobs because while their husbands work, they spend the day moving back and forth just collecting water for drinking or for washing. In the article, it says that's time that could have been spent working to generate an income or to get an education, notes the Water Project, a nonprofit tackling the water crisis in the region. We'd be remiss if we didn't mention the looming water crisis in Europe. It says here, after Europe recorded its hottest year yet in 2024, which, by the way, many nations in Europe have also recorded their hottest 2025. Spain just came out and announced that they had the hottest summer in 2025 ever. Germany experienced its driest known late winter to early spring period this year. Drought extended across large parts of the continent from the United Kingdom to Central Europe, while Mediterranean countries have experienced ongoing severe heat, wildfires, and water scarcity. At the same time, more and more industry sectors are competing for limited water resources, says Sergis Moroz, a water management expert at NGO, the European Environment Bureau. The IT sector is suddenly coming to Brussels and saying, we need a lot of high-quality water for all the growth that is going to happen. Farmers are coming and saying, look, we cannot grow the food without water. This topic is so massive, you guys. I mean, we could pick any one country and dedicate an entire episode or 10 episodes to the water situation in that area. The number of factors contributing to the decrease in water availability, from massive data centers to feed or cool our AI use, to overconsumption, to pollution, to geopolitical issues. Look, when it comes to geopolitics, I mean, we've got places like Ethiopia, right, who are building a massive dam. They've actually just finalized it. Kellen and I did an episode on water in the past, and we talked about this dam being built. It is now completed and it is moving at full capacity. This dam threatens to remove water access to Egypt and to Cairo. And what is the reaction to that from a geopolitical standpoint? We also reported once upon a time on the water issues between Israel and Palestine, right? And Israel not letting water into the Gaza Strip. Well, at this point, it kind of seems like a moot conversation, right? And as terrible and depressing as that is to say, water availability, while of course still epically important to people in Gaza, is overshadowed by the fact that a genocide is taking place from bombs being dropped, from the ground invasion that just began last week, so on and so forth. That's one of the most interesting things about collapse to me, is that we have this sort of slow march towards collapse, right? Through catabolic collapse and nations, governments, people consuming their infrastructure, consuming themselves, and leading themselves down this pathway to failure. While at the same time, there's all of these other external pressures that could end up making that march moot, right? Are we as concerned about declining water availability when bombs are being dropped on our heads? Are we concerned or as concerned about the conditions or the potholes in our roads when there are fascists marching in the streets and we're losing our rights? Are we as concerned about, you know, what the degree of, you know, temperature above the baseline in 25 years from now when the wildfire is burning our home down at, you know, at present? And it's terrible to say that or to view it that way, because it should still matter. We should still be able to fight on multiple fronts. We should be able to look towards the future and plan and hope and make changes now to better our situation then. But it is a very difficult thing to do when we're facing and putting out so many proverbial and literal fires as we speak. All right, I know this was a bit of a wide topic. We didn't get into any super narrow or specific situations that any one country or person or nation might be facing. But I do think this would be interesting to step back through in the future. We can do other daily episodes on more specific issues that countries are facing when it comes to water. Just a reminder, appreciate the water access that you have. And hopefully you're taking some steps to safeguard water in your area in case you ever don't have access to it. Thanks for being here. We will talk again tomorrow. Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.